Hi guys, and welcome back to Topic Tuesday. If you were able to watch any of the previous episodes, and thank you so much for your support. It's so much appreciated. And we're on episode 12, so officially 3 months of podcasting. I'm loving it so much. So yeah, thanks guys for just your views and support. It means the world to me. So I'm very excited today because I have my dad, aka Big Mike, joined with me on the hotspot seat. And I actually don't know how I've got him here, guys. Like, it's actually a miracle because my dad hates the camera. He hates when I ask to take a photo with him. So how I've got him in a podcast studio with bright lights and a camera, I actually don't know. But Dad, thank you for being here because I actually think he'll be able to touch and help a lot of people in this podcast because we're going to be talking about all things kind of like career related, work-life related and related, and also a bit about my dad's story because I think it's in one way relatable, probably for a lot of people. And I think it will be really helpful. I was saying to my dad when I was walking here, in this generation, I think a lot of things have changed due to kind of like my dad's generation. And I think the old school way and things are still actually really important. And I think sometimes in this generation, we lose touch of that. So having you here and being able to bring that to light, I think is really important. So first of all, Big Mike, introduce yourself.
Hello guys, I'm Mike. I am Lucy and Lydia's very proud father and even prouder grandfather to Ziggy. I'm delighted to be here with Lucy here today, and I'm looking forward to the conversation.
I can't believe I've got him here.
I can't believe that you've got me here either. So I think that's down to your resilience and perseverance and persuasiveness. So, yeah, I can't believe that you've got me here. But listen, I've got some time on my hands now. I'm recently retired, so I have some time, and I'm just pleased to lean in and help you in any way that I can. And if I can help just but one person, then it'll be a good use. It'll be a good use of my time.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. As we were walking here, I said to my dad, I think it's really important for you to share your story, even from a young kid, because I personally think it's really inspiring. And I think not only has it shaped you so much, but I think it shaped me as well, as your daughter. Mm. So yeah, tell us a little bit about you and a little bit about your journey.
My parents came over from Ireland in the mid 50s, and then they married and they had myself and my brother, and we were brought up here in Birmingham, not too far away from where we are today, in what was an extremely happy childhood, full of love, completely cherished. So we had a magnificent upbringing, marred by losing my father at a very early age.
How old were you?
I was three. My brother was 3 months. And my mum actually wasn't too much older than you, Lucy, mm-hmm. right now. So, you know, at 30, 31, widowed with two children, age 3 and 3 months, back in the early 60s, that was particularly tough. Mm-hmm. And as a result, we got lots of help and support from the wider family, and mum just dug in, mm-hmm. you know, took 2-3 jobs, and the family was the center of everything. And we turned adversity into hopefully something positive and constructive, as dreadful as it was. Mm-hmm. It certainly shaped us in terms of driving forward, making things happen. I'm being personally
work
active.
Ethic.
Yeah.
You always from, I said to Dad on the way here, I was like, do you feel like losing your dad so young and then also losing, because you lost grandma at what age?
So mum passed in 2000, so that mum would have been 68.
Yeah, so in this life as well, that's quite a young age to pass. So you lost both parents quite young, but I feel like the person that you are, the journey that grandma took you on whilst being widowed with two kids, has definitely shaped the person that you have been and are today. Like, you are the most hardworking person I've ever met in my whole entire life. And I think probably watching as a young boy, grandma have so many jobs and have to really hustle to provide, it's innate because of that. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. You're driven by many different things. You've got personal motivations, you've got personal drivers, you're shaped by your environment, nurture, nature. Mm-hmm. And then as you go on your journey, you take those habits and disciplines with you going forward. So I would say so. I would say that we took the symbolism of what we had to deal with and turned it into something positive. I'm mm-hmm. a glass half full kind of guy.
So, I never know what that means.
Well, you can look at things and I think in essence it means whether you think you can or whether you think you can't, either way, you're probably right. Uh-huh. So why not have a positive mental attitude mm-hmm. and be really constructive about what you're doing mm-hmm. And fill your thoughts with the positives and what I can do as opposed to the reasons why we can't.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that holds people back from time to time is that fear of failure mm-hmm. or fear generally mm-hmm. and I think it's really important to kind of reflect on that and let go of that mm-hmm. if you possibly can, but that's what glass half full means.
Me and Dad had like quite a nice conversation as we were walking here, and you said to me you were like, as a child you grew up with like nothing but you had everything, and I really like that saying because you would probably agree with me that with regards to like, I don't know how you say, like wealth and growing up with money around you or nice things, whether it be materialistic or whatever, there was none of that in that sense. But you just said like you were so loved and like the house was so full of like nothing in that sense, but everything when it comes to like family and love and warmth in the house. And again, I would say that's led you on to the person you are today as well, because in Lydia's podcast last week, Lydia was talking about how my dad's quite frugal, which I think means like doesn't spend a lot of money. Is that what it means? Because Lydia said it and I was like, I don't know what that means. Like tight with money, no?
I think careful.
Careful with money, yeah. And that's absolutely true, I would say. And would you say that because you grew up with nothing in that sense, it's made you be so careful now? Does that make sense? Like you really have taken care of the hard work and the equals of what that looks like. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. And I think it did probably shape me to a greater or lesser extent. I don't think I'm quite as frugal as my darling daughter. Lydia makes out. I don't think that at all. I'd like to think I'm kind of generous of heart and spirit. But when it comes to financial matters, I mean, there are some very old lessons that you have to learn, whether it's you can only spend £1 once. So, you know, be very clear about what you're spending, what that pound is, where it's coming from, what you're spending it on, etc. And just to maybe keep some to the side for a rainy day mm-hmm. And save for the future, for the immediate and medium term mm-hmm. and then for the longer term. Because the one thing I find quite surreal and, you know, sitting in front of you today, it's probably invoking this. It's, you know, even for me to say that I've retired or whatever I've done over 40, 45 years, it sounds ridiculous to say this, but it's absolutely flown by.
What has? The career?
The time.
The retirement time.
The time. No, all of it. Oh. All of it.
Oh.
The retirement time's only a month, 6 weeks.
But that's flown by.
It has flown by.
Oh my God.
It has flown by.
Dad was like, I've never been so busy. I know. My mom's put booked so much in the diary. He's like, I need a break.
I know. But the whole thing has flown. And I was thinking about this last night in terms of even if you measure time with Ziggy, I mean, we'll be celebrating Ziggy's second birthday in July. Mm-hmm. And that's 2 years. And then your pregnancy. And then,
crazy.
Then we think back about prior to you starting your business, and it just flies by. So
flies by.
The one thing I would say is It really does speed by. It's like a little bird that flies away. So I think if you align that back to making the most of every day, turning up, making things happen, I think it's...
If that's not Big Mike in a sentence, then I don't know what is. I've never known someone for 45 years have so much motivation every day. Like, I've never seen Dad complain or, you know, sometimes, and I'll be honest, I have these days more often than not when you wake up and you're just a bit like, and sometimes you feel like, how am I going to attack the day? That's one thing I've never seen you have, like, in a negative way. You're always so positive and it's so infectious. And all, when Dad retired, he had a retirement party and everybody was saying, like, Dad never turned up to work with a mood, a bad energy, a frown on his face. Everything you turn into positive, I think it's amazing. So we've just touched on career of 45 years and recently retiring. Let's go into that because I think people are really interested. They really want to hear your story. And then we'll get onto your topic Tuesdays because this so far has been the most popular in terms of response. It's been crazy how many questions have been written in. And I was going through some of them with Dad previously and there's some really good questions. So Dad, career, when did you start with, you've had a long time career in the same corporation. So when did it all start? Tell us from when you were a teenager, what that looked like and paint it.
Really didn't have a clue in terms of growing up what I wanted to do. so just did the examinations that we all do, O-levels, A-levels. Back in the late 70s, not many people went to university. I didn't go to university. I finished A-levels and then applied for a role. I enjoyed the subjects that I did. I think economics was one of them. And I thought, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Maybe the finance world, maybe financial services would be something. It's got my interest. It's piqued my interest. It's something I should have a look at. I applied. I got the first application that was sent off accepted. And I started as an 18-year-old. And back in the late 70s. And I have been so lucky with the corporation. It's a magnificent place to work. I've had the very best of times, huge, huge learnings, some growth, some great opportunities and mandates, huge learnings. So I've been very blessed.
And you're not, I want to dig deeper. So when you were 18, what did that look like? How did that feel? What were you doing alongside of it? What did the social life look like? How much effort were you putting into work? Like, paint it out a bit more.
Ooh, ouch.
I know everything. So I'm like, come on, Dad, give us more.
Well, I think I was on a voyage of discovery. I wasn't, at 18, I was very much into sports and fitness. I used to love playing soccer, playing football.
Soccer?
loads of different teams, Saturday, Sunday, midweek. So I was very wet behind the ears in terms of going into the organization. But as I've said before, they allowed me to grow, develop, mature. And I just became very curious about what was going on and asked lots of questions and got fascinated about the challenges that were in front of people. And then just from there, just grew into it. I started off making the tea for everybody, like everyone did at the time, and just build yourself up and build up your roles and responsibilities. And quite straightforward, really.
So at the time when you were young, you were playing semi-professional football alongside going to work. But at that point, you, as a little kid, you were actually more interested in the football, weren't you?
Yes.
So at the time you were, it was kind of like me when I was working previous at corporate. I had like the side hustle of all my social media stuff. So you were kind of similar in that sense. You were playing semi-professional football. And at that point, weren't you getting paid more at football?
Yes, probably. Yeah.
And then you were at work.
Yeah.
So like, what did that look like when you were like having to rush off from work to play football?
I kind of had very supportive management that would allow me to go a little bit earlier in the day, that were very interested. They were very interested in what I was doing and would come and support. And, you know, it was really fabulous days early on. Mm-hmm. But it was pretty obvious to me that I wouldn't make it professionally in the game. Mm-hmm. And so I had to buckle down and do my exams and qualify and then take it from there. But at that time, there was a period when, yeah, I was earning more playing football. Yeah.
I personally think you would have made it. You're a great football player. And so at this age of 18, what age did you meet Mom? It was a bit later, wasn't it? It was like when you were you 25 when you met Mom?
24.
Tell us about that a little bit, because lots of people wrote in and they were like, ask your dad the tips on how to have a successful marriage. But you met Mom at 24, and at this stage you were in the bank.
Yep.
And you met Mom where?
We met at, I think it was a wine bar in Lichfield, mm-hmm. The Monterey. It was a big island, the Bowling Green, and we met that that Saturday evening in 1984.
Let me know, 1984. Seems like a lifetime ago, doesn't it? Mm. 1984. And Mom was very supportive of you.
Totally.
With work. Mm-hmm. And I think part of the reason why you were so successful, I remember Mom told me, she was like, one day I just said to your dad, if you put as much effort into your job as you do at football, you'll be like extremely successful. And that was a huge turning point for you, wasn't it? I remember you saying that at that point you just kind of sat there and like the penny dropped. And I think it was from there that you really started to excel in your work life, would you say?
Yeah, I think so.
Behind every great man is a better woman.
Even better woman, yeah.
Yeah. So talk to us about that when you started to really excel and, you know, the long hours that you were working and sometimes the guilt you may have felt being away from family or Mom. And then when me and Lydia came, and because you worked away quite a lot. Talk to us about that in terms of like feeling and emotion and what that looked like for you.
Well, it was very acceptable in the day, and it was the thing that lots of people did. Thousands, if not millions of people would have done something similar back in those days. But in essence, it was when you're serious about the relationship and you want to move forward and you're partnering in the fullest sense of the word, then there has to be this mutual respect and support for each other in terms of what it is that you're going. As long as you've got a shared agenda and you've got the same goals and you're achieving hopefully the same outcomes, then there's nothing that you can't achieve together. I think some of the problems come if those kind of agendas split or diversify, mm-hmm. or you're just off track. And for us, it was a great foundation that we built on. I think the arrival of Lydia and yourself was absolutely inspirational for us both and gave us other gears to go mm-hmm. into. Mm-hmm. And then I think you do get, I really wanted to push on and get ahead and deliver. I found myself in situations where I wanted those more complex mandates and roles. And sometimes that would mean, you know, moving away, and we'd have long discussions and debates. Mm-hmm. And is this something that I can do?
Feel like having kids made your drive stronger?
Yes.
Yeah.
1,000,000%. Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, if I went to work on a Sunday afternoon and came back on a Friday night, which is what I did sometimes, mm-hmm. If not routinely.
And that's when you were working in the UK, but you were working away. Yeah. Because a lot of people wrote in from me and Lydia, how we've been quite open online about how we grew up abroad, interested in like dad's moves. So like where he went. So in the beginning, it was all in the UK, wasn't it? But in Leeds, for example, or where else was it? Was it just Leeds?
Yeah, Southampton, around the country, Scotland. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but in effect, it was the same way. You were away for long periods of time.
Yeah.
But what's really interesting, that just worked. And that's what I think is so special. And now I've had a kid, I'm also like, damn, how did Mom do that? Like,
exactly.
Bro, she had two children and did full-time mom for the whole, like, I would be on the floor. I'd be on the floor. It's such hard work. But I don't know I think times were really different, weren't they, back then?
Yeah.
And I think, again, times have changed right now, but it worked for you, didn't it? And I remember, I don't know if it was when I was due or Lydia, but you were away, weren't you? You were working. And Mom gave you the call as if to say like, You need to get back to Birmingham because this baby's about to come, and you had to drop everything and shoot down the motorway, and you got there in time, didn't you? Oh,
absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But it just seemed to work, didn't it?
It did. And so you're right, your mum takes absolute full credit for everything there. And that base and that strength of support and
allowed you
absolutely, absolutely
to be so successful in that sense, because you were kind of, when you go to work, you were just
in the zone.
Yeah. But did you find it hard?
Yeah, I found it very difficult. I didn't like leaving you guys. And it was tough, and it was emotionally tough. But as I say, that's what we did back then, and you just bunker down and get on and do it. And I look at where we are today, for example, and how everything has moved post-COVID, and we've got hybrid working, and we've got things that have moved on immeasurably.
So much has changed.
For the good and for the better, I believe.
Yeah.
And that's fantastic, and that's really good. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that was my story. That's what I did. And because of the support I had, that's what I fulfilled.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about after kind of you did your moves in the UK. I mean, Lydia were born and then grew up to, I don't even know how old. You made the first move to...
Jersey.
Which is not a million miles away. It's literally over the Channel Islands, which is where I grew up as a little girl. And honestly, like, was the most incredible... I met my long-term best friend there, who's like my soul sister. And it was incredible, wasn't it?
Oh, beautiful.
We were able to have such a blessed childhood. And now I have a son as well. I'm like, wow, like that really was really cool to like have that experience. And you really enjoyed it there, didn't you?
Yeah, it was super. Absolutely fantastic. So I was very lucky just to get my head down and... work hard, deliver on your objectives, be supportive, be collaborative, try and make sure you link across departments within the organization. I kind of soon realized something that was very apparent to me. And what that was that I couldn't do it on my own, and I couldn't do it, full stop. But I was lucky enough to have an ability to build teams of great people who together we could achieve these things. So I quickly identified, by making sure that we take care of our people, then we can ultimately deliver for our customers and hit whatever commercial targets we had. So
would you say that was one of your strengths, building great teams? And like people leading?
I think it's for other people to say, but I hope so.
Okay. Well, following his retirement party, I would say, yeah, that was one of your strengths.
I enjoyed it. And then I was lucky enough to be asked to do these mandates. And my attitude was to take roles that you're offered. And it's quite interesting because there's quite a few people that may not have that same view because of whatever reason. But if you let go of fear... and let go of any anxiety that stops you from taking these. Be uncomfortable. That's where you get growth and development. And I think you need to be measured about it. You don't need to go and take unnecessary risk, especially with a young family. But I think our attitude, my attitude was, let's take on these roles. People believe that you can do the job. That's fantastic. So why don't you take this opportunity and see what you can do? And one of the things I learned at that time is the greatest gift that you can be given is by someone having a belief in your potential. So if someone believes in your potential to do something, that is a rare gift to have. And so I took that as a lesson for people, colleagues, friends that I worked with, because everybody is... everybody is possessed of that potential to go on and do better things. The issue, the opportunity is to unleash that potential. And that's where I hopefully helped from time to time.
So first move was Jersey. What was the peak, best part of it?
Loved the role, loved the people, loved life outside of work as well. Beautiful island. So I would say I might say this about all the opportunities, actually. People make it special.
Yeah.
And it's a special place, and it allowed us to, you know, explore different areas and travel accordingly. But yeah, people, I would say.
And then on to Taiwan. So that was quite a big jump from Jersey and the Channel Islands, because you're not really going too far. You're just going over the ocean, but then taking a huge jump and like almost a 14-hour flight over to the other side of the world, over to Asia, Taipei, Taiwan. Talk to us about that. So you had that, what you were just speaking about, that one person who believed in you almost, and they kind of, you guys became like a little duo, didn't you? And you had that opportunity to build teams and work amazingly together in these different places. But going to a whole different country over the other side of the world with a whole different culture, a brand new language, which none of us knew even how to say hello in. And you're not only moving by yourself, which is a lot easier, but you're moving three other people in a family of four to Asia, Taiwan. What did that look like for you? How was it? What was your peak and pit?
Yeah. So I think it was, looking back, quite pivotal for me personally, and I think it was pivotal for us as a family. I do remember coming home one time and saying to Mum that there's an opportunity to move out east. And we did have the joke between ourselves at the time, which was around, but do we know anyone in East Anglia? And it was like, no, sweetheart, no, this is a bit further than that. This is an island off Hong Kong and whatever. So again, and what a fantastic testimony to Mum's support to actually come with me on a journey into what was a fantastic place with great people and a great business. And we looked at it and we made the decision that we would go and do it. And I think it has gone down. I think all four of us have said it's
best time of our lives,
probably
baby.
Probably the best 4 years of our lives,
best
professionally
years.
And personally.
Yeah.
And what it did for you guys in terms of learning a different language, seeing a different culture, being exposed to different stimuli. I mean, it was just fantastic. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was incredible.
So pretty much great move in that sense. I think like if I put myself in that position now, like obviously you're a lot older than me right now, but it's still such a big thing. Like, and we were also really close with, because your parents obviously sadly weren't here, but moms were, and we were already close to them. So not only is it moving from Jersey, you know, like a 14-hour flight away from family, like there was a lot to consider, wasn't there?
Yeah.
And I remember when mom and dad went for like a viewing. What was it? I can't remember what it was, but like the food itself, it's so different and it's so far from what we know in the UK, but like so amazing. But even that, like you really had to come to terms with a whole shift in environment, culture, people. Yeah. But super amazing, wasn't it?
Very special. Very special.
And what in environment wise at work, what did you feel was different culturally? Work harder?
Well, no, work differently, I would say. Not necessarily harder. The organization is the organization, so those cultures and values will be promoted everywhere. But I would kind of characterize it around the important cultural aspects of, you mentioned food, you mentioned family, you mentioned friends, you mentioned feelings. You soon learn some important lessons as how to work with colleagues, how to get the best out of them. Why would it be different in an Eastern culture versus a Western culture? And I think one of the most stark examples of that is, especially in the Far East, looking at how colleagues would even read a book. I mean, you and I read a book, we go from the left page to the right page, we read across the line, we've got letters as opposed to characters that in some cultures go down the page. And that taught me the importance of perspective. Mm-hmm. And that taught me the importance of context. Mm-hmm. And what that means is you have to step back and just understand the environment that you're in mm-hmm. before you try to make yourself understood in terms of what you want.
I love that.
Because if you're leading with people, then you really need to understand before you make yourself understood. And that was one of the biggest lessons that I learned. And I learned so much from my colleagues in Taipei. It was just wonderful.
Did you feel any, I love to talk about peak and pit now, I feel like it's my thing. Did you, any negatives, was there any regrets or low moments that you found, you know, being so far away in a different country? I actually can't think of a negative.
I don't think so. Yeah. I think we were blessed to have Maria's parents come over, I think, two or three times. Mm-hmm. That was a beautiful blessing. Mm-hmm. And to see the joy in their faces was fantastic. I thought it was pivotal for you and Lydia. Mm-hmm. I thought it was really important. I think Mum enjoyed the experience. Mm-hmm. And I had the very best of times with great colleagues and friends. Mm-hmm. And I was thrilled and delighted even to get some messages when I retired a month ago, mm-hmm. despite the fact that I'm gone 15, 16 years from Taipei. But it was just magnificent. Also allowed us to travel within the area and to kind of broaden our perspective and scope of mm-hmm. this particular area, which you may or may not be visiting otherwise. So, yeah, it was absolutely fantastic.
I would agree. And then from Asia, you came back to Europe or Asia, however you look at it, and took a posting in Turkey, in Istanbul.
I had another opportunity within Canary Wharf for a period.
Oh, yeah.
So I did that for 5 years.
Oh, God, look at me forgetting.
So basically the career is a combination of episodes that you put together mm-hmm. and experiences mm-hmm. that actually turned into that. Mm-hmm. So in between those two, there was a post in Canary Wharf again, which I really enjoyed.
As I say, I don't think this man has not enjoyed a day of work.
No, and I've been blessed for seeing
the positive in everything.
No, it was really good. It was, again, working with great people, great challenges. Really enjoyed being in Canary Wharf. Mm-hmm. Again, there would be maybe the Sunday night or the Monday morning departure and a Friday return. Mm-hmm. But you're just so full on. But that was really great. And then within that, an opportunity came to take on another role in Turkey. And again,
oh my goodness,
fabulous, really, really enjoyable.
Istanbul is one of the most incredible cities in the world, I think.
Istanbul is so cool.
It's so cool.
Yeah. So again, not that we're complete foodies, but, you know, the experience of eating out in Istanbul, and again working with great friends and colleagues, challenging times from a business perspective, but that's how, again, you learn, develop and grow, and you do what you need to do and then you move on. Absolutely fabulous. Mm-hmm. That was a 3-year piece, and then I came back to Birmingham. So it was quite nice because I started from Birmingham and then did these episodes and then came back to Birmingham to take the role in Birmingham. And do you know what? The time came, 45 years. And then you have to think about what's the next piece. Mm-hmm. Do you carry on, or do you say, what do you want the next chapter to say? Mm-hmm. I mean, I'd love it to be another book, but it won't be, sadly. What's the next?
I actually think Dad would keep working.
What's the next chapter? And I think my attitude was, let's just be clear about what the next page is. So this is time now to reflect, maybe give back something to society, do some charity work, do some volunteering, maybe a bit of consultancy, support you guys and spend time with you guys as much as possible, and just to be the best grandfather that I can be.
AKA the reason why he retired is because he has a grandchild now. Oh, yeah. which is probably a huge driver in a moment that I actually think was really difficult for you, and maybe you weren't so transparent about, just because maybe you didn't want to be, whatever. But, you know, retiring after 45 years is difficult when work is all you know, and the work in the way that you did, i.e. being mom was stay-at-home mom and going to work every day and working so damn hard for 45 years is all you know. So I actually think retirement was quite difficult for you to get your head around. Would you agree?
I think initially, I mean, I'm absolutely loving it.
Yeah, which is so good. I'm so glad you are.
It's only 6 weeks, so things can change quite easily. I do look out for my BlackBerry. I do look out for my emails. There's no messages.
Do you feel a bit like naked?
Yeah. It's quite surreal. But if you're doing something that you're passionate about, it's a bit like you with your business. Mm. If you're doing something that you're passionate about, and I love serving customers and I love working with colleagues, then it hardly feels like working because you're so passionate about it. And I felt that for very, very long periods in my career. And I think that's how I've got to a 45-year piece. So I would encourage people to follow their passions and dreams and find something that you're fascinated and interested about. Be curious about it. Learn as much as you can. Be relevant. Mm-hmm. Be proactive. And then just as I said before, move your feet to success. Just keep active.
And in that 45 years, did you ever have a stale moment where you thought, I'm going? Like, I feel flat.
Inevitably, there will be occasions like that. And you do question, what's the next position? What's the next challenge? Why is this happening or not happening? So there are episodes like that. And one or two things happen from that point of view. First of all, you've got to persevere. You've got to stay resilient. You've got to deal with adversity. I mean, you can't sit here and say there aren't challenging days. There are challenging days for everybody. And right now, I just appreciate and love the fact that people are able to speak up a lot more than they did in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
And I think it's so important to have these discussions and debates. Doesn't matter what the subject is, if it's a physical, if it's a mental health issue or anything like that, it is so important to speak up, to seek help and assistance. And to move things forward. But yeah, there were one or two occasions when, why isn't this happening with me? Why isn't that happening with me? And it's interesting what came out of that, because what I was doing at the time without realizing is that I was comparing myself to other people. And that can be quite dangerous. What you have, you are good enough yourself, okay? So you don't need to worry if you're looking at what is happening to somebody else constantly, because comparison is the thief of joy. So don't worry about that. You're good enough yourself. Concentrate on your own skill sets and competencies. I think skill sets and competencies are probably more important than job titles. How do you develop and grow yourself? And then build your portfolio of experiences that can hopefully fit into an organization, or you build your own portfolio of experiences externally in the market. And yes, it would tend to suggest building up experiences with various companies is an option, and one that's used quite a lot nowadays. I don't think this is the end of 45-year careers. I still think you can if you get all these things in place. So for those moments that I was questioning, there was almost a realization, what are you questioning here? Because this is about delivery. This is about performing. Is there something within that that needs to be uplifted? And take the feedback. Don't take it personally. Add to your skill set, move on.
So I think I'm the one in the family that is a bit different, and I definitely am the risk taker. And sometimes I think that makes dad feel quite uncomfortable. And it's not just in work life, in all that I do, I think I would say I'm the risk taker in the family, would you?
Yeah.
And I think dad was like, oh, this is making me slightly uncomfortable. But as I say, I had to go and find out what was making me happy, because although in corporate, I actually didn't think I was very good at it, dad, I'll be honest. I don't think it brought out the best of me. It's really kind that you thought I was really good at it. Thank you. But it didn't make me happy, and it didn't really make me tick. And the joy that dad had going to work. Like, I didn't have that in that place. And I think I just had kind of had to take the jump on, was like, I just have to go and do what makes me happy. And I am so glad. Although I think I learned a lot and it built me as to like who I am. And I learned some real great foundations. I think when it's time that you're just not happy and fulfilled. And when you're going to work every day and you're kind of feeling like flat and uninspired, that's when you need to kind of take your move and make the risk. So this could be a yes or a no. Did you ever have a moment in your recent career where you were unsure if it was for him?
No.
Yeah, thought so. Any work regrets, i.e. not paying into a pension early enough or not taking a promotion that you were given? Have you ever turned down a promotion?
Oh, good question. I don't think so. I think I've taken pretty much every opportunity that came to me.
And you think like it definitely pushed you in a right direction? No promotion ever brought out a bad side of you, or you feel like it hindered you in a way?
No, but be clear, it doesn't all happen in a straight line. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like this. There are times when you might take a sideways, you might then get the next uplift. I mean, occasionally then maybe take one that's slightly down, which allows you then to go up
again. Have you ever done that?
No, but it is there as
yeah.
And I've seen people do that and do very, very well out of it.
Have you taken a few sideways moves?
Yes.
Yeah, they're always good, I think, because taking a sideways move brings you experience and you can learn more whilst not being so out of depth.
Yeah.
Because that's when sometimes I feel like things can go wrong, because then you're not delivering. And then X, Y, and Z. Dad, great ways to be financially set for the future, i.e. any financial tips or tricks or some ideas, etc.
So a couple of caveats to start with. Number one, I'm not going to give financial advice. Number two, I'm not qualified presently to do that. But apart from those caveats, it's you do need to take care of stuff and financially plan for your future. I don't think there's. I would love for there to be. I think one of your guests said recently the point around more financial education in the school curricula. And for people, and we haven't had the conversation yet. I think we've probably intimated that we will have the conversation, but how do we get Ziggy into financial education aspects and things like that? It's really important youngsters of today understand the basics. And
I don't know why it's not taught at schools.
I think it needs to be.
I think it's like, I wish, looking back now to school days, I learned about bills,
of course,
plan, like budgeting, pensions, how to be set
spot
up
on.
For life,
spot on, spot
like
on.
I came out of school, I didn't go to university, dad wasn't too happy about that either. I went straight into work, and then when I moved out, I literally was like, WTF, like council tax, all of these different bills, then like, it's just crazy.
True.
And you just
True.
Don't learn about it at school.
True.
And I think now I have my own child, I am going to be not drilling it into him in like a sergeant major way, but like, I'm not going to sugarcoat anything and I'm not going to protect him from what life looks like financially.
Yeah.
Because it's not all mom and dad pay for everything. It's, and this is actually what goes on behind the scenes, you know?
Yes. And of course, we've got things like a cost of living crisis at the moment. And we've got to be very sensitive about what's happening in the economy. But to answer the question, you know, just review what you're doing with your protection levels. Mm-hmm. Make sure that you've got the insurances in place that you need. Let's go back to my backstory. I'm not too sure there were very many insurance policies in place in 1962. Make sure that you've got protection in place, you know, your life insurance, your income protection, if appropriate, etc. Do think about tomorrow, because tomorrow comes. So your retirement plans, go and see an advisor and put in place plans for your future. And then start building up your pockets of money over the short, medium and long term for your future, because time flies. I know it's very challenging in terms of today, and your call out on scheduling and budgeting and planning is really, really important, but just have different pockets.
So when you get paid, what do you think you should split? Savings, like bills and stuff that you have to pay, and then money for you?
Oh, my personal view, and yeah, it is just my personal view. My personal view is that when you get paid, you do your savings the first thing that you do, mm-hmm, and then the rest you've got going into your budget.
And percentage-wise, what do you think that should look like?
That depends on your personal circumstances. Even if you can save 5%, 10%, doesn't matter.
It's the discipline.
It's the discipline of doing it on a regular occurring, mm-hmm, situation. But one of the tenets that, one of the principles is, don't try and save it at the end of the month, because that will go. Mm-hmm. That will evaporate with normal household expenses and going out and budgeting and shall I have a night out and shall I go out for a meal? Mm-hmm. Do it the moment it comes in. Save that 5%, 10%, mm-hmm, 15%, whatever you can afford.
And I'd say that's one thing that I learned as a child growing up with dad. Even if I could save £3, I would save it. Because it got me learning when I got my first job at 16, because I remember I'd get £10 pocket money, and if I asked my mom for anything more, she'd laugh at me. And then they told me, go and get a job, honey. So when I got a job at 16, and obviously I was working in retail, it was still like pocket money, really. But even if I could save £3, I had a savings account and I would put that £3 in. And I'm telling you, you learn the discipline of saving so quickly. And within time, I saved enough money to take, this is crazy looking back, it's not crazy actually, what it might be, I don't know, but I saved enough money with that discipline to take a flight to Beijing by myself, do you remember? And that was purely all funded by me, because you just learn this habit. And this sounds really stupid, well it might not, but you become addicted, not addicted, but like, once you get into the habit of something and you get really good at it, you don't let it slip. So then from 16 of learning that mindset, like now to 29, it's still embedded in me. And I do that every month. Like when I get paid, my savings comes first, then my household bills comes immediately after, then pretty much everything is gone. But then anything left for me, you do. And that habit of saving is just imperative. And I'm telling you now, rainy days exist. You don't know when that's going to come, especially if you own an apartment. Never do that, by the way, because you get bills slapped through the door and you're like, oh, there's that rainy day. But yeah, that is such a good one and something that I really, really feel like I've learned from my parents. Right, let's see. How to ask for a pay rise at work?
So that's a very popular question. Mm-hmm. The way that I would answer that is probably based on your review cycle, in terms of when do you get your annual appraisal? When do you get your review? I think it's important that you need to know the context of the market. What is that job paying elsewhere? Are you within the typical threshold, or do you believe that you're potentially underpaid, overpaid, or just about right? I would recommend that it's combined with a set of deliverables that you've, mm-hmm, achieved. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important that you've shown your personal brand in action.
Mm-hmm. You've got to go with examples.
You've got to go with, you know, I've completed on my, mm-hmm, actions, whatever, and milestones, mm-hmm, and I've got this feedback from customers and feedback, mm-hmm, from colleagues, mm-hmm, and I think I'm worth, mm-hmm, X or Y. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a healthy discussion and debate.
Me too. I think it's really important.
And I think it's happening more prevalently now.
As it should.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you almost have to, not me talking from 5 years experience, but I've also watched it happen in the workplace. You can't go in there with nothing. You have to go in with like a case study of you, i.e. what are your objectives? What did you deliver against that? Because you need to show that you've gone above and beyond. Because if you're just delivering what's expected, you're not going to get a pay rise. True. You need to show what you've done to go above and beyond those deliverables and show that why you're worth it. Examples are so important. Verbatim from other people, testimonials, sound like my dad right now. But you have to go in for a meeting asking about a pay rise with confidence and conviction that these are my examples, this is what I've done, this is why I deserve more.
True.
Right?
True.
Amen, sister. Right. We've already spoke about this, but it says, unlike our generation, will you teach Ziggy early about money management? And I think,
oh yeah,
this boy's not going to hear the end of it.
And I think there's almost an element of let's make sure that we teach all our children digitally, mm-hmm. but also let's teach them physically as well with mm-hmm. regards to cash and, you know, even the symbolism of putting a pound coin into a jar every month or every week or whatever. I think that's important. And I think it's the combination of the digital world that we live in today, but also don't forget the physical world in terms of dealing with cash.
Mm-hmm. What is your biggest achievement in life?
You and Lydia.
Oh, that's so nice. Work-wise?
Got
to just say one.
Helping people become the best they can be.
So people leading?
Yeah.
The people in work. And I think that's, yeah. How do you know when it's time to leave a company and take a step in a different direction?
I think it's a combination of your own feelings personally, together with, you know, maybe feedback that you're getting within the company as well. And I think the two together shows that, you know, this is not win-win. We're not moving things forward. Mm-hmm. Maybe I need to look in a different direction mm-hmm. or do something different. Mm-hmm. I do like to persevere. I do like to show resilience. I recommend that. Make sure that we take the value from the coal face and not move too much and then just keep on moving and moving and moving. That said, there will be times when you just need to make a cut and make a move. Mm-hmm. And I think trust your judgment. You'll know when it's time.
Mm-hmm. Tips on getting a posting abroad.
Deliver.
Really?
Deliver.
Yeah.
Just deliver. And then once you've delivered consistently beyond the standard that's required, I don't think in any walk of life that there is anything wrong with saying, I need a new challenge. And I think you should ask for those challenges mm-hmm. and opportunities. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure most organizations that have international opportunities will be able to showcase them. Mm-hmm. And then I would say to you, just go and take one.
Mm-hmm. Don't say no. So someone has written in saying that they have a really toxic work environment and a very toxic boss, and they're not sure how to navigate it. How would you advise, or what would you say to this person to help them?
Okay. Again, just a personal view. The kind of things you should be looking at in no particular order, is this the right place for you?
Mm-hmm.
Are your values aligned with the company? Mm-hmm. What I would say as well is, you know, think about the channels that you've got inside the organization. Can you speak up?
HR.
Can you escalate?
Which, by the way, you should absolutely do, because no one deserves to be like bullied in a workplace.
No, I agree. But the most important thing is to sit down with the individual in the first place and to have that conversation and to explain how you're feeling and why and to try and understand what's happened here. I think it's important to do that in the first instance and then you have a set of actions you can take thereafter. Mm-hmm. But I'm very sorry to hear about that.
Mm-hmm. And I think, as Dad said earlier, like, times have changed a lot, and now the way these organizations and corporations are set up, they're set up in favor of the employee, because there's so many streams and so much help now and ways that you can make sure that these things don't happen. Whereas, as you say, before, in the olden days, you were told to make tea for the workers, for example. Yeah, it's very, very different now, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think the leader's role today has changed a lot, Lucy, as well. So, you know, they've got to provide, you know, what's the context for the work that we're doing? How am I building skill sets? How am I inspiring people, et cetera, and so forth? So, again, very sorry to hear about the circumstances.
What was your favorite, this is not work related, what was your favorite childhood memory?
Kicking a ball, riding a bike.
Kicking a ball and riding a bike. And it's probably still your favorite thing
actually
to do now.
Yeah.
We're like, I told Dad that I'm going to start getting Ziggy into like football. He's so excited. Have you ever suffered from imposter syndrome?
Yes, inevitably.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think so. So if you take these opportunities and you find yourself in a situation, especially abroad, where you're having to deliver on objectives and milestones, there comes a moment when you just reflect, oh gosh, can I do this?
Mm.
Oh, really? I mean, oh my word, I'm not too sure I can do this. Mm. I think, to be honest, there were some occasions when I thought that, and then I would just sit back and reflect and think it through and just say, the answer's in the room, mm-hmm. the answer's in the building, mm-hmm. the answer's in my team. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you just kind of reach in and use your best friends. And your best friends are good open questions like who, where, why, what, how, when. Mm-hmm. And then you get the information that will help you formulate that proposal or that recommendation or that activity. So, yeah, there's occasions when you think, oh, crikey.
For sure.
But then you've just got to, and this is where resilience and perseverance comes in and reflection. You've just got to step back, think about it, and go at this from different mm-hmm. angles to see if you can get the answer.
What does Big Mike think is the most important quality to look for in a partner?
In a partner?
I'm jumping work, personal here. So this is personal.
The biggest quality is loyalty and passion.
How to tackle an interview when you have crippling anxiety. So relating back to me, I used to do interviews. So I used to be on the other side of the table of the person who was coming for work. And when I used to do interviews, I actually personally don't think I'm very good at interviews. I don't enjoy them. I think they make me really uncomfortable. I find them quite controlled and like I'm in a box. And like if I don't answer this question, my whole freaking next step depends on it. And I find it really difficult. And I do almost feel that sense of like anxiety and nerves. And I'm guessing in some of your roles where you've interviewed, you can also relate. I mm-hmm. think they're really nerve-wracking. Mm-hmm. Spotlight, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. they're difficult. Mm-hmm. What are your I know you've interviewed a lot of people, so let's just touch on some of your hints and tips to give people when going for jobs and when being interviewed.
I would say just make sure that you've done full preparation. Look at the job role, look at the job title, job description, think about the skills and competencies that are required for that role, and then build out some examples, mm-hmm. not just in your head, but write them down. Mm-hmm. So if the skill sets are communication or initiative or, I don't know, resilience, mm-hmm. Just think about three examples that you've got from the work that you've completed in your current role mm-hmm. that you would have ready. For that. So number one, be clear on the skill sets and competencies. And to tell you the truth, they are numbered quite nicely mm-hmm. and they're very well described. So have those examples ready. Be prepare and practice. Mm-hmm. See, there is no problem explaining that you're very nervous and anxious about this role, but I really want it.
So if someone was going into an interview and they were feeling like crippling anxiety, you think it's strong for them to, when they're in the interview, explain that?
I don't see any harm at all.
It's personable, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you wouldn't like mark someone down for that?
No.
No. And just for me and my 5 years experience, when it comes to interviews and returning a question that's answered, structure is actually really important. And how this will help you is you don't waffle. I'm really good at waffling. You've probably learned that from this podcast. But waffling is really easy in interviews because you're nervous. So blah, 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 blah. But having in your head a structure of how you can answer the question. So there's a way you can do it. So STAR is one, for example, having the situation. So this was the situation. T, this was the task. A, this was the action. This is what I did. R, this is the result. And this is what happened.
Good one.
That will absolutely give you a big tick in the box because you're being really concise, but you're giving the information they want to hear. Because on the other side, when the interviewer is sitting there with a piece of paper and marking you next to a criteria, tick, 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 and then you're not going off on one and actually not answering the question. And my second piece of advice would be personable. You're a human and the person sitting on the other side of the desk is a human. Mm. you know, interviews don't have to be boring and back and forth. What I think is really important is if you can go into an interview and turn it into more of a conversation, like you were two friends, maybe in like a restaurant or something, they're going to remember you. That boss is going to remember you because you made the hour of that day quite exciting. And learn things about them. Ask them questions. Make sure you go into an interview and you have questions to ask the person. That's really important. It shows that you've taken initiative to learn about them as well. You not only learn about them as a person, have questions about the business, have questions about the day, how you can make that day better if you were to get that job. That was pretty good advice from me.
Absolutely. Show your personality.
Yeah, absolutely. Show your personality. You know, laugh. I wouldn't make inappropriate jokes. To be honest, I don't think I've ever made a joke in an interview because I think I've always been like too nervous and it's quite a scary, daunting place. But if you can go in with that confidence that you really feel like you can get that job. So as you know, I'm a mom now, that's very obvious. And I'm not back in the corporate world, but I can very much place myself back there mindset wise. And mother's returning to work. Now I am a mom. I get it. I used to be at work and have, you know, there was lots of ladies going off for maternity and I remember the anxiety and the pressure they had. And I always used to sit there and think like, is it really that deep? But like, now I get it. It's extremely that deep. Not only have you, some women go back to work 6 months after they've had a baby. Mm-hmm. That is, Dad, at 6 months, I was a mess. Mm-hmm. I could not go back to work. Mm-hmm. It's not only going back to work, it's leaving your baby, like whether they're going into childcare, like it's absolutely heart-wrenching. So women going back to work after a maternity leave, no matter how long it may be, some women go back after 6 months, some women go back after a year, a little bit longer. Any advice for them?
I think things have moved on immeasurably over the years. Mm-hmm. And my advice is just to have confidence in the organization because, you know, you are an absolute integral part of the company. Your contribution is, you know, fantastically appreciated. And the flexibility that we have today in the wider business areas is such that you can absolutely do that. And it's an important segment that we continue to foster and grow. So it's incredibly important to organizations to have the environment that's right for mothers to return to work and to give them the flexibility that they need to do a fulfilling role at work and being a fantastic mom as well.
Yeah. And do you think it's really important for moms when they go back to work? You mentioned the word confidence, but having the confidence to ask for what they need.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's really important, guys. You can't go back to work and not be clear on what you want and then be bummed or upset that you haven't got it. I think before you go back to work, be clear on what you're asking for when you get back, because I think you do a return to work interview.
True.
So you need to make sure that when you go to that interview, you're clear. And, you know, the worst thing that they can do is say no. And then you have to figure out a different route. For example, if what you've planned in your head doesn't quite work with the team or whatever it is. So being really, really clear and having a plan is really important, I think. And then also going in with confidence. You've just been off for how long and you've created another life and you've just parented or whatever. You've just figured it out for the first year, you know. Companies now, as you say, Dad, and I agree, I think are very much warm and understanding of what it takes to be a mother.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think we're in a much more beautiful place with it. But I think what Dad and me are saying, like, you need to go in with what you
communicate,
want.
Communicate.
Communicate. It's really, really important. Okay, guys, thank you so much for watching. I hope that you can get some great takeaways from that. And if you have any specific questions off the back of anything we've spoke about, then please pop them in the comments below. Or if you'd like to stay anonymous, please message me privately and I will either send them over to my dad or if I can help get back to you directly. But before we go, Dad, is there just one bit of takeaway, final advice that you would like to give anyone watching?
Well, first of all, thanks for getting me
here
today.
I can't believe I've got you here.
and then secondly, I would just say, just go for it, guys. Work hard, go for it. Lean in and support each other. Be kind. We need more kindness in this world.
And make it happen.
And make it happen. Amen.
Thanks so much for watching, guys. Ciao.